Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Football Americana. This week, I'm talking to my former coach and current head coach of the U.S. Women's National Team, Vlatko Andonovski. Vlatko is Macedonian-American and was a defender during his playing career for multiple clubs across North Macedonia before moving to the United States and playing indoor soccer. So we'll fast forward a second. I'm going to share some stats that are going to embarrass you a little bit, Vlatko, just so people get an idea of the stats of your coaching career. But I did want to share one more thing in your bio that you might not have even known, but Vlatko is also the third best free kick taker to ever take free kicks at Swope Soccer Village, behind myself and Milan Ivanovic. So I don't know if that one's usually in your bio, but I wanted to make sure we threw that one in there.
Oh my gosh. I mean, now I feel honored. You know, when you said third, I was a little bit disappointed, but being behind you and Milan, I mean, it's an honor.
Yeah, I figured that would really change it up for you. So, but besides that, being in the third place on that, Vlatko managed the Missouri Comets, the indoor professional team, before moving to his first job coaching on the women's side with what was at the time FC Kansas City. And with FC Kansas City, you had a really impressive winning percentage. And I have the percentage here, something I think it's in the almost 80% winning percentage, won two championships, was NWSL Coach of the Year two times. And now with the U.S. Women's National Team, you've won two She Believes Cups and just won the CONCACAF World Cup qualifying tournament. So, Vlatko, I know I joked with you when you got the U.S. Women's National Team job. I said, Vlatko, you're going to be famous. And you were like, no. But could you have ever imagined growing up, you know, wanting to be a professional player in Macedonia that you would be coaching the U.S. Women's National Team?
I mean, I have to say, I couldn't imagine that I'm going to coach female soccer players, because growing up in a country where female soccer was not even a thing, there was no league. Girls did not play soccer, women didn't play soccer. So, I mean, even in my wildest dream, I couldn't think of something like that. But ever since they came in the country, I figured out and I saw how big women's soccer is, now I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about your youth football upbringing. Was it always your dream to play professionally as a young player?
If you grow up in Macedonia, or I grew up in ex-Yugoslavia, it seems like everybody's dream was to be a professional soccer player. I mean, everybody's dreaming that one day is going to play professionally in the local club or the city, the club of the city, and then play for the national team, and then we'll go in Europe and play in this big club. I mean, that's what everybody's dreaming about. And for me, the dreams were same, and it didn't help that my brother was a professional soccer player. My dad was a professional soccer player. Two of my uncles were players, and the third uncle was a goalkeeper professionally. So now when I think back, I don't even know if I had a choice. Maybe I did, but I couldn't see, now looking back, I can't see the choice. It was soccer on TV. It was soccer when on our family gathering. It was soccer in the house. We went to soccer games. So that was it. I guess they left me with no choice.
And was there a point where you remember kind of, I mean, obviously they set the path for you, kind of had a vision of what it took to get there. Do you remember at a point when you knew like, oh, I'm good, I can actually, you know, make it as a pro as well?
I don't know if I ever felt I was good. And that could be good and bad. I mean, bad because maybe not enough confidence or never believed in my qualities as a soccer player. But in the same time, I feel like that was what kept pushing me, that I need to get better and constantly get better at constantly work harder. I guess even as coaches, what makes us special sometimes is the fear of failure or fear of not being prepared enough, and we just constantly keep working on little things.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And when you said that, I was thinking, you know, I think a lot of the top players I talk to and people who are at the top of whatever field they get to don't actually feel that they've ever really arrived at the top, or they never feel that they are so good. And that's part of what I think makes, you know, you as a coach, I remember you would be staying up all night after a game along with us as players and probably thinking about it 10 times more than everyone you're coaching, which I think is obviously a great quality. When was it that it ever dawned on you that coaching was an avenue you can take in the game? Like, did you remember a point in which you thought, you know, oh, I'm actually good at being a leader in that way?
I don't know if there was a point, but I know that ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to be a coach. Like I was always that one kid that was a little bit annoying on the field, even in the kick arounds in the neighborhood, would get together and everybody's having fun and doing their own thing. And I was the one that was like, okay, hold on, we need to organize. Like, this isn't going to work like this. And, you know, you need to do this. Not always was accepted well by the friends who just came out to have fun, but those were my first steps of coaching and or managing or organizing.
That's even a harder job than coaching a professional team sometimes.
Yeah, the professionals are very very good about taking information and implementing.
Yeah. How do you feel like your experience playing indoor soccer and coaching the indoor game has influenced your coaching now at this point?
You know, I love indoor. I love small study games. I love futsal. I grew up playing futsal myself along with outdoor soccer. And I think it's very helpful. It teaches a lot. If you look at when we're trying to achieve something at trainings, we very often create small-sided activities. We create 3v3s, 4v4s, 5v5s because we want to create this or we want to develop these creative thinkers. We want to put the players in situation where they're a little more sophisticated, a little precise. They solve problems under pressure, in tight areas. And that's what indoor is. That's what futsal is. That's what the small-sided games provide.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I remember you talking once about when you first came to the U.S. and told a little story about how you didn't even know indoor soccer was a thing. So it's really, it's interesting to see the trajectory of your career and how kind of, maybe by chance, some of these things came together, but they've really influenced who you are and how you view the game.
Yes, actually, it was the first call that I got from a friend of mine who invited me to come and play indoor here, and I didn't understand the idea of indoor. And he said it's very cool, and you know, you have these walls around. That was the first thing. I was like, whoa. we're not playing soccer with walls. Like, forget about that. Like, how am I gonna tell the team here that, oh, I'm leaving the team and I'm going to go somewhere else and I'm going to play soccer with walls? Like, you know, I don't think it will be accepted well. So, but then, you know, I came and like I said, I enjoyed it. I loved the time spent playing indoor, and it taught me a lot. I'm glad that I made the decision to come.
Yeah, well, I'm sure if they saw you now on TV coaching the U.S. national team, they wouldn't be like, "Oh, what is that?" So I think your decisions have justified themselves. I'm curious to shift gears a little to your work with the national team. How would you describe what you're trying to build with that team? Obviously, there's a very longstanding history that we've all witnessed, and now you come in. And what is your vision for how you take it forward from here?
You know, if you watch the team in the last few months, CONCACAF and a few camps before that, it is very obvious the direction that the team is going, or the way the team is going to look in the future. What we're trying to build here is a mix of youth and experience, and we've realized that it's just not possible to have one or the other. And the best mix is to have the drive, the energy, the youthfulness on the team, but not just any young player. I mean, we're talking quality young players. You know, we're talking Mel Pugh and Sof Smith and Katarina Makarios and Foxy, you know, those type of players. But also, it's important that we have players that have been in the trenches, that have been in this tough situation, that have dealt with adversity, that have won big moments and big tournaments, World Cups. So if we can find the right mix and blend and put them on the field together, that would be ideal. Actually, that's what we're working towards.
Yeah, that's really well said. And I think we can all see that. I think I saw a stat that you've brought in 19 new players since 2019 in your time there. So a lot of people getting their first opportunity. Has there been something about the job that sticks out to you that surprised you? Or do you feel like you kind of could have imagined thinking forward as to what it's like?
You know, I don't know if it surprised me, but there were things that I knew are going to be hard, that I knew going to be tough, they're not going to be easy to do. But actually, I've realized that it's harder than I thought and more difficult than I thought, because, you know, building a team, it's a difficult task. Like any team, you know, obviously we were in Kansas City and then I in Seattle, and it wasn't easy. Club team, you know, to build it, to create that cohesiveness between the players, to build a style of play, implement the principles. All of those tasks are hard on the team, but building an elite national level team is probably the hardest thing that you can imagine in soccer. And this is not, I'm not talking about me, my job in the United States. I'm talking any national team, any or top national team in the world. And the reason why I'm saying that is because, you know, when you have a club team, you work with them on a daily basis. You just have opportunities to work, and you see the progress, and then you can fix it from week to week. Where the national team, okay, you don't know what you're getting when the team comes to you, because they're with the team for a month, and then they come from their environment, they all come with a different mindset, from different environments, they come from different coaching style. Literally, just like this camp against Nigeria, we have players that are going to play on Sunday together. I mean, not together, against each other. And they're going to get on the plane together to fly in Kansas City so we can get them together. And now I need to tell them, oh, now you guys are on the same team and we're going to build this greatest team in the world. You know, it takes a little time to turn that switch. It takes a little time to adjust to that, okay, what you did there, it's good, great, but it's different than what we do here. I'm not saying that is right or wrong. It's just different. And now all of you have to shift the mentality, shift all the knowledge that you came with, and you need to refocus on what we're doing here. So that's the first hardest part. The second hardest part is you feel good now, you know, after day two, three, four, like you feel good. It's like, okay, now we're getting somewhere. Okay, it is looking good. We're making progress. And then we go into the game. The game finishes and they leave. And literally every time before we take two steps forward, we need to take one step back, because then you don't have them for 5 or 6 weeks. Obviously now with technology, we're able to communicate with them and work with them, but not as much, because we have to be respectful to their club teams, to their markets, to their coaches there, and because they have obligations. And I constantly challenge them to be the best person and the best players in their market. So I got to give them space to now refocus when they go in their markets and do what's best for them. So now this is just a glimpse of what putting the best team together or the elite national team team looks like, and what I didn't expect to be as difficult as it is. But we're making strides, we're moving forward, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you talk about that, because that's actually something that also is kind of a little bit new in the US as well, because until not so recently, most of the players didn't feel a very strong affiliation to their club team. They were national team players, and maybe even in the past had residencies where they lived with the national team. And then as there were, you know, leagues in the US, sometimes they would play club soccer also. Only in recent times here has that really changed to kind of mirror how it is everywhere else in the world. But it's very interesting to hear you talk about it from the coach's perspective, because I've kind of seen it over the years from the player's perspective. So are there any other things, are there things you miss about coaching on the club side besides, you know, that day to day? Is there anything else that's kind of you've noticed as a big difference?
Yes. I mean, one last thing is like that made it very, very tough or difficult is like I came from club environment where every day for months or for 2 months in preseason, we work on implementing style and principles, and we had every detail, as you know. I mean, we've played, we've worked together in Kansas City, like we knew to an inch how far we move up, down, left, right. We're here. We have to rely on the knowledge that the players are coming in from their club environments, and we just have to kind of tweak to the point where it fits in our style. And in order to do that, again, I'll take the example of this upcoming two games against Nigeria. The players are coming, and then they have recovery. They have the one light training with not the whole team, only partial team, and then they have one full training, and then match day minus one, and we go into a game. So I need to know how to prioritize and find out what can I do in one full training and one partial training. Like that's all I have to prepare for the game. But it's not just preparing for the game. It's one thing preparing for the game. I need to also prepare the team long-term so we can win long-term and we can win World Cup. And then I have to continue the process, develop the young players. But in the same time, I need to be able to build a team or, you know, build a culture and tweak the culture. So all of that in 1.5 training. So that was one of the things that I was trying to figure out how to prioritize and have a good plan in place to do that and execute it well.
Yeah, you know, I don't envy that. That sounds like a massive challenge. And it's really interesting to hear you talk about from your point of view, the challenge of doing that. Because I've been on the playing side of working through the 2 months of preseason that you mentioned and how much goes into it, how much thought and detail and the building of the culture and all of that. And to have it broken up into those camps, you know, I can imagine how difficult that is. And it also makes me think about, you know, obviously you're coming into a longstanding history of an incredibly successful team. Do you feel that that's made your job easier to kind of continue to grow that? Or is it harder because of all of the pressure of what's been done in the past?
I mean, I don't think it could have been any harder than it is. I think that first, Jill couldn't make it any harder. I guess she had 2 World Cups, won both of them, which I did. I think it's one of the most incredible things that any national team coach can do. And coming in, it is so hard because the expectation, anything except winning, is not accepted. That's one thing. The second thing is, it's not just winning. We need to win in style. We're a U.S. women national team, so that's those are the expectations. But I knew that coming in. It's not like I didn't know that the team won 2 World Cups. It's not like I didn't know that this is the best team ever in the world. Mm. I knew that. And I guess that's the challenge that excites me. That's the challenge that keeps me going, that I want to continue this. And I want to make sure that, you know, we win the third one and be the team that that has done something that hasn't been done before and will probably never be done before. So that's what makes me excited. You know, just coming in, embracing the challenge and working towards it is what keeps me motivated every day.
Yeah, it's extremely exciting and extremely difficult. I can appreciate what you're saying. So shifting a little bit to talk about the World Game, I know I was texting with you a little bit when you were over at the Euros, actually. So curious to hear some of your thoughts on the Euros and just watching the women's game over the years since you got involved in the women's game at first. Like, what are your thoughts sitting and watching? Some of it was, I mean, everything from the atmosphere to the play on the field and the level of competition is just... When I watch it, I feel emotional because I've seen the women's game from when I grew up and what I was watching till now. And it's just, it's so impressive.
Yeah, I think that the Euros took the women's game to another level. I think that they just pushed the standards again. And it was an incredible event, incredible competition. And from the organizational standpoint, but also I think from the playing standpoint, we saw some great games. We saw some great moments within the games that were good for me to see live, but also I think were good for women's soccer. And I think that the Euros actually just proved what I've always thought, but was never really accepted. Especially here in the country, you know, because I was always saying, is women's soccer around the world catching up? Women's soccer around the world caught up 15 years ago, okay? But our team, Jill and the team, found a way to stay on top in 2015. They found a way to stay on top in 2019. It's not like we went in these two tournaments and won 5-0 against England or Spain or Germany. It's those little details, little things that the coach and the players figure out to do to stay on top. So now they showed again that yes, women's soccer around the world is at the level where we're at, but it's our responsibility to find those little things to implement those little details that will make a difference between winning and losing.
Yeah, and what you're saying is really interesting to hear because, you know, it's almost like because the U.S. team is expected to win, it's almost like people maybe don't take fully into account, you know, oh, well, of course, yeah, they won in 2015, 2019, everyone's just playing catch up. But that's not the case at all, you know, based on what you're saying. And I think what it looks like when you see there are really quality opponents out there and the fact that the team has consistently found a way to keep winning, there's a lot to be said for how impressive that is.
Yes, absolutely. And another thing is, I mean, if the other teams were catching up, then why is it that our team didn't win for 16 years between 1999 and 2015? So, I think they're there. Every, you know, there are so many good teams. I mean, there's a group of 10 teams that at any point in time anyone can win a big tournament. And we saw that with Canada. They were at that point, I think, ranked 8 when they came in the Olympics and ended up winning. You know, so it is important that we don't get complacent, that we don't get arrogant at any point in time, and make sure that we all understand that women's soccer in the world is growing, and we're gonna have to continue working hard and harder than ever to stay on top and win the next one.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Canada, and I think that's a really good example. But looking ahead to the World Cup, which other teams do you think are especially strong right now, or maybe are making a really strong run towards it? And then, are there any other countries that you think, you know what, like you guys watch, this country is going to surprise you? Because I know over time, just knowing you, you've said like, hey, this player or somebody young or some team that you think, you know, watch in 6 months, they're going to be greater. And I think you have such good insight on that. I'm curious to hear kind of your take.
Yes, I don't know if I want to go into details. You know, obviously we do our work and study and research to make sure that nothing surprises us going into the World Cup. But it's pretty obvious that, you know, the teams that are doing well. You look at the Euros, I mean, England, I thought they did an incredible job. And then playing Germany in the final, you know, Germany is always going to be, Germany and Sweden, I feel like, are the teams that are always figuring out a way to get on top. Somehow they always manage to win big games. And I think France and Spain have incredible teams and are doing well. Holland, if they're able to bounce back from this tournament, I think that they can surprise. And we saw that in 2019 that they surprised a lot of the teams. I'm actually very intrigued to see Australia. You know, because I know Tony is a great coach, and they have a really good, energetic, and intense team hosting with the support of their fans. I'm intrigued to see how they're going to do.
Yeah, no, I wasn't asking you to give up any special secrets from your scouting. I wouldn't do that to you. But no, it's interesting to hear you know talk about the teams in that mix. So obviously, there are a ton of teams with quality, as you pointed out. Do you feel that the Euros took England to kind of a next level in that conversation, or was that always how you've seen England?
I mean, I don't know if the Euros took England to another level, or England used the Euros to show what they can do. I think Serena did an incredible job managing the team and organizing them and allowing them to show what they can do. And they just used that opportunity and did a great job.
Yeah, no, that's well said. So last question before we go into our rapid fire false nine to kind of finish this off. No pressure on that. But talk a little bit about, obviously it's an incredibly daunting task, I can imagine, for you guys as a coaching staff to select the roster. I mean, it's a good problem to have, but you know, the depth in our country and the, like you talked about, the mixture of the youth versus experience. Can you talk a little bit about your process and what it's going to be like for you over these next however many months in the lead up to selecting the final roster? Like, how much of that have you maybe already kind of sorted out? And what are the criteria? Like, what things are you considering most in this?
Yeah, so when you're selecting, when we're selecting the roster, that's for us like putting a big puzzle together, and we have an idea of how we want the team to look, or what we believe is going to be a team to win the World Cup, and we kind of then jump and don't quite work backwards, but we jump at the very beginning and start putting the puzzle to form the picture that we want. So obviously the first and the general ideas are that, you know, the players have to be healthy, they have to perform well, they have to be in form, and they have to be fit physically. But also very important for us is that they have to be fit for the environment. They have to fit well into the culture. So that, you know, when we're evaluating the players from the tactical standpoint, we do watch a lot of NWSL games, and we evaluate and analyze. I mean, we have a whole platform and process of how we evaluate every single player that is on our depth chart that we have 36 right now. And we also evaluate them on a weekly basis. Now, we start with the idea, and then with our model, with our principles, and then we look for high performers that fit into the model. Like how would the things that they do on the field would fit into what we want to do, or sometimes how would player that doesn't fit in the model help us reshape the model and make us even better. So we're not really locked on. Okay, this is the only way. If we see someone that is performing well, and we believe that. This player can come in and help us reshape the model and make us better. Yeah, we're open to that. And we've had situations like that before. But then, like I said, at the end, it comes to the trickiest one, which I think is how much is this player fitting into the culture or the need of the team. And that's the process or selection process that we go through.
No, it's great to hear you talk about that quite openly, because I think people always, you know, the roster comes out and there's all this commentary publicly. And I don't think people really realize how in depth and how interconnected things are. It's not just a player for player, like, hey, rank your best 18 players in the country. It's so much more complex than that. So it's really good to hear you describe your process. And I was sure you had a very in-depth process in place, but I was still very interested to hear about it.
Well, I mean, I feel very comfortable with the process that we have and very confident in the coaches. I think they do an incredible job in analyzing and evaluating all the players. And like I said, we on a weekly basis go through every player in our depth chart. And we do it for a couple of reasons. One is for to evaluate and evaluate for our purposes, but also analyze to so we are furthermore able to help that player with the individual development plan. So if there's something that we believe that the player is not doing right for the team at all, but the same thing would fit for what we do on our team, then we manage to call the player or schedule a meeting and then go through a video session to help them with the development. But if it's something that doesn't work well for their team, but it doesn't fit with ours, then we try to stay away and not interfere.
Yeah, well, now as a GM of a team, I do appreciate that the second one there. but no, it's amazing too how much technology supports what you guys are doing. And I've always known you to be like on top of and very uncomfortable with technology. So it's great to see how that's really helped to support coaches and players in this process. Okay, we're ready for our false nine, just nine. It'll be nine kind of quick questions. First thing that comes to mind, or you can kind of talk about your thought process if you have a thought process debating what you're gonna say. So first one, what all-time match would you want to attend?
I mean, if there is one match that I would really want to attend, that's the final of the World Cup 2023 U.S. Women National Team versus anyone.
Oh, I thought you were going to say who. I was like, ready. I was ready to hear who. Okay, that's a very, very good answer. I would like to attend that match as well. I might need you to leave me a ticket, please.
If we get there, yes, you can count.
And can you get my plane ticket as well? Plane ticket and hotel as well, please. no, just kidding. I'll gladly buy a plane ticket. If you guys are there, I will come to the game. Penalties to save your life. Who's taking it?
Megan Rapinoe, no question. Anytime. Yes, closed with her eyes closed.
You know what? A few people have said Pino, and I think it's because she probably just wouldn't even really care and she would just go do it, no pressure, not even, which I don't know if that's disturbing if your life is on the line or, but it seems kind of comforting in this case.
she is unreal. I mean, her ability to score penalties in big moments under pressure is insane. Obviously, on the team, we have several players that are able to do that, but Pino has proved that she can do it at the biggest stage in the biggest moments, and nothing phases her. The way she sees it is a moment of glory.
That is very well said. She's excited about the opportunity to do a celebration. So.
Yeah.
The first match you remember watching?
The first match I remember watching on TV?
Yeah, or live, either one.
On TV was qualifiers Yugoslavia versus Bulgaria. It's the epic match. I'm sure you can find highlights on YouTube. It's one of the most interesting match that I watched live. And it was a qualifier for Spain, 82. Oh my gosh, wow, does that make me old?
I don't know. They had video cameras back then to capture it?
It's one of those back then that, it's one game a month. And that's, that was the one that I remember.
Yeah. Well, you caught a good one. So that's good. Who would you have a poster of in your room growing up?
Oh, Diego Armando Maradona. I think everybody had. I don't know if everyone had the... anyone had anything else? I mean, we all grew up in Diego Maradona era, so...
Yeah. Favorite stadium you've played in or coached in?
I would say coach. I've been to a lot nicer, better stadiums as a coach. Cincinnati FC stadium. What is it? TQL, right? I can't remember the name of the stadium, but I think it's incredible. Columbus, yeah, we played in Columbus against Uzbekistan in April, I believe. That was a beautiful stadium too. I mean, Right now, we've played in so many nice stadiums around the country. It's incredible. We opened up the one in Austin. It's a beautiful stadium too, brand new. It was the first game we played against Nigeria. And I know that I heard Nashville is a really nice stadium. So that's someone we're looking forward to hopefully play a game in the future. We've been fortunate to play in some really, really nice stadium. The nicest atmosphere that I remember was against Spain in Red Bull Arena. Yes, it was filled up, full stadium, and Julier scored in like 88, 89th minute to win the game 1-0. It was incredible.
Yeah, I believe I was at that game. Awesome. Okay, funniest player on the U.S. Women's National Team?
Funniest player on the U.S. Women's National Team? Megan Rapinoe. I think Pino is funny sometimes without trying to be funny. I mean, she always has good lines. But you know what? Sonnet. Sonnet is quirky. She comes up with some interesting things. So, yeah, I would put them both there in different ways.
Yeah, you do have a pretty funny group. I think that's one nice thing about the team that I remember over the years and I appreciate about the players is there's so much pressure. The intensity is so high, but there is a really good sense of humor around the team. I'm sure you guys laugh a lot.
Yes, they've been great. You know what? Lately, Rose and Lindsay have been doing some stuff that is funny too. Like in the environment, they come up with different things.
They're stepping up there.
They had a few moments last game that we're still laughing about.
That's great. I don't miss certain things about playing still, but I miss that a lot, just being around the team and the laughter. Do you have a favorite pair of sneakers?
Oh, it's Nike Reacts running all day. I have them in different colors. My favorite.
Great. Your go-to snack?
Go-to snack? Lately, I would say when we go in camp, because we stay up late every day, we do snack a lot. And my go-to in camp is the Haribo, the peaches.
Yes, those are good. That's a good one.
Brilliant.
Not a very healthy snack, but it's a good one.
Yeah, we have to stay up. We need sugar.
Yeah, that's fair. You hear that, Haribo? You got a sponsor Vlack on the U.S. Women's National Team. I don't even know how to pronounce it, so hopefully I said it right. Okay, last question. I'm glad we're ending on this one because you talked a little bit about before on how your coaching journey started, just out playing with your friends at the park. Do you have a pickup pet peeve?
Pickup
soccer. You might have been everyone else's pet peeve, like the guy who coaches all the pickup games and sets it up. But what's your pet peeve if you go out and you just have a group of friends playing? Like, what really drives you nuts?
I mean, I think that if it's not structured, we have to have a line, we have to have goals, we have like everything has to be structured, and it just drives me nuts. I always, if we have a pickup, I always have to have the cones out. I have to have a proper ball. I mean, when did we play pickup one time?
Oh yeah, it was out in LA. Yeah,
in LA.
I forgot when you came
up
here. Yeah. Was that structured enough for you? I set it up, now I'm nervous.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah, it was
okay.
Good. Like,
okay,
I enjoyed it. We had the lines, good goals, the teams were set, like everything. So
you know, I feel the same. There's no point if it's not like organized enough, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. I know we ended on a funny note, but really appreciate your insight. So much of what you shared and just hearing you talk about the amazing opportunity of what you have to build, but also the challenges involved is really special. So thank you for taking the time and giving us a little bit of insight into what I'm sure you spend hours and hours and hours thinking about every day and every week.
No, thank you very much for having me. I'm glad we could have this conversation, and I always enjoy, and I never know where this conversation is going to take when I talk to you, Yael, because you know so much about me as a coach and so much about the game and the women's soccer game. So I'm always excited to see which direction you're going to take the conversation.
I enjoy it. I, there's not many people I could talk to and really make me want to play again. And now I leave these conversations, I'm like, oh, should I go train or what should I do? So thank you, Vlatko.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.